It is great to be back with you. I'm excited about summer. I'm excited about our character series. I'm glad you're here today. We're in the third week of that series, and we'll be talking about Moses today. You can turn to Exodus chapter 3 if you want to jump ahead and get ready for where we're headed today. I want to take a quick moment to say, Chase isn't up here this morning, but I want to say thanks to him for sharing last Sunday. If you were here, you heard him share a little bit about God's call and will we answer. And we're going to piggyback right on that topic and talk a little more about what that call might look like and what we can learn from Moses about how we respond to and answer the call when God does call us. So we're going to look at Moses this week. I think it's going to be fun. It's another one of those characters that everybody is familiar with, if nothing else, because maybe all of you think he looks like Charlton Heston, right? I mean, like, that Ten Commandments movie is on TV on, like, the classic movie channel all the time. So I feel like when I picture Moses, it's hard not to see him as Charlton Heston. Although, I found out this week, there's a new movie coming out in December, maybe some of you know this, called Exodus, in which Christian Bale will play Moses as he goes to free the people from the Israelites. So for a whole new generation, there might be a new face for the person of Moses. I know nothing about the movie, I just saw that it's coming out. Moses is one that I think many people know of. We have learn from the time we are little, and I just want to look again at this interaction that happens between Moses and God in that moment at the bush when he is called and God speaks to him, and try to learn what it might look like in our response to God's call. So let's read together Exodus chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 1. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so you might bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. We'll stop there for a moment before we continue. As we talked about the idea of calling and responding to God, the first thing I want to look at in life of Moses this morning is this, that our calling is directed, or you could say a direct result, of God's mission. Our calling is directed or is a direct result of God's mission. Look what happens in this story of Moses. He's going on about his own business, doing his own thing, and he's so rudely interrupted by, as I like to say, a flaming shrubbery, right? Like, he is doing his thing. It reminds me of Monty Python, sorry. So he's doing his thing, and all of a sudden, boom, there's this interruption. We know Moses' life story, right? He started as a baby, he's saved, he's raised in the royal palace, and he lives this life of sort of privilege. He probably didn't lack for much of anything. He probably had a life many people at that time would have dreamed about having. And as he grows, he ends up witnessing some abuse at the hands of the Egyptians on one of his fellow Hebrews. And so he goes out later in life then to save this person, ends up being maybe slightly too harsh, and kills that man, right? Which Pharaoh gets upset about. So Moses has to leave his life of luxury, his life of privilege, and he's sent off to basically become what I grew up around, a rancher. He's sent out to Midian where he is brought into a family, ends up having a wife, and we know at least one child, at least in the passage we're looking at today, and he's given a herd to tend to. And this has become Moses' normal life. This is how he lives, right? For a long period of time, Moses is basically just a rancher. I'm going to suggest that most of us look something like Moses. We're not necessarily ranchers, but I would imagine that you've gone through some process in life where you've moved from childhood or college or all those crazy years into some form of normal life. It's just the way that you live. You have the routines. You have things that are part of what it looks like to do the job that you do. You have a certain circle of friends. You have a spouse, possibly, or children, possibly. And there is sort of a normal life. That's basically where we find Moses, living life, doing his thing, taking care of the animals. But then God steps in the middle of all that's going on, and interrupts him. At least that's my interpretation, that Moses is doing his thing, and God shows up. It says, while he takes the flock out to pasture, to a particular spot, probably because it looked good, or was a great place to graze the animals, he goes there and all of a sudden sees the burning bush. He goes to it, and God begins to speak to him. And after making it clear exactly who it is that's speaking from the bush, verses 7 through 10 are sort of making the point I'm trying to say. The Lord said this in verse 7, I've surely seen the affliction of my people in Egypt. I've given heed because they're crying because of their suffering. I want to take them out to a more spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So I want to send you to do it. God's mission of redeeming his people became the occasion for the call of Moses. Moses didn't just decide one day to do something while he was out tending his flock. And God didn't call Moses for any particular reason that had to do with Moses. It had to do with the mission God was hoping to accomplish, and Moses was the one he called to fulfill it. What I'm saying is God's call for us, when it comes, is usually not something primarily about ourselves. He calls us because it's in line with his mission, what he wants to accomplish. He calls us because he's passionate about something, and he's going to use you to accomplish it. It should save us from a couple things when we start thinking about stuff God might be asking us to do. It should save us from thinking that God's will for our life is primarily just about us. That tends to be something we like to think pretty often. It's not. It's about him. It's about his kingdom. If what God is calling you to do only involves you, you might want to think about it a little bit more. If it doesn't involve his kingdom or things he's passionate about, or it doesn't line up with what you read in Scripture for what God cares about, you might want to think whether or not that is something God is actually calling you to do. It will also save us from thinking that following God's will or God's call is about us getting something. Not just about us, but we also tend to think, well, if God calls me to do something, I ought to get something out of it. Right? We tend to think that way. The idea that God's calling is in line with something that he is hoping to accomplish should save us from thinking that it's about us receiving something, although I do think that happens as a side benefit, and it's often something we're not expecting, but it's not primarily about that. So we need to be sure, as we are feeling God leading us to things, that it is checked against his character and his nature and his word. Are we being called to something which we already know is true of his character and of his nature? Are we being called to be passionate about the things that he is passionate about? If so, maybe we can be sure that God is speaking. So the first thing I think Moses' story tells us is that our calling, what we are called to be as Christians and following God, is directed by and is a direct result of God's mission. The second thing I think we can see, as we're going to continue reading, is that our obedience to that is based purely on the fact that God has called us, not on anything within us. Keep reading from verse 11 forward, and we're going to read a fair amount here. But it'll be worth it, I think. Verse 11. Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he, being God, said, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you, that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. Then Moses said to God, Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me. Now they may say to me, What is his name? What shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am, has sent me to you. God, furthermore, said to Moses, Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever. And this is the name you shall call me from generation to generation. I want you to jump to chapter 4, verse 1. Moses answered, What if they do not believe me or listen to me, and they say, The Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, What is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, Throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, Reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, Put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak. When he took it out, the skin was leprous, as it had become white as snow. Now put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, If they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, Pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, Who gave human beings their mouth? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, This is so good. Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. And the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, What about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. In the course of what we just read, Moses tries pretty frequently to get out of the thing that God is calling him to do, using just about any excuse that he can. And so I want to look at some of those because I think what they tell us is we tend to see our response to God's call how do our abilities or what's in us, are we able to accomplish that thing? Do we have it within us to accomplish the call of God? And I think what God is going to say is you don't, and that's okay, because I'm with you. So let's look at least three, particularly of the objections that Moses gives to God. The first one is in verse 11. Moses' first objection is, Who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Moses' first response to God speaking to him is a feeling of inadequacy. Who am I, God? I never went to seminary. I'm a rancher. Who am I that I should go back to Pharaoh's court and demand that your people be freed? Why do you think I could actually be a person that could ever do this? Surely you got some wires mixed and I'm the wrong one. Have you ever felt that way in your life when God has spoken to you, that you were feeling God speaking? Maybe it was to talk to someone, maybe it was to do something, maybe it was to stop doing something, who knows? And you said, Surely, God, this was not intended for me. Do you know who I am? I am in no way qualified for this thing you are calling me to. Who am I to do that, God? Who am I? And I think God says back, Maybe you've forgotten who I am. I think we say to God, Did you forget who I am? But he says to us, Maybe you've forgotten who I am. He says, shortly following to Moses, Certainly I will be with you. It's his response to Moses' question. Who am I to go to Pharaoh? God says, Certainly I am with you. And that's enough for you to go to Pharaoh. Moses' feeling of inadequacy were signs of his fearfulness instead of his faith. God would be with him, and it didn't matter who Moses was. It only mattered that God was with him. When God calls us to something just based on our own abilities, our response is usually, I don't think I can do that. I don't think I have it within me, when we think of it that way. But this story from the life of Moses tells us that God calls us to things which we can't do, and the point is that he will do them, and that he is with us. It actually is something that Moses learned over his lifetime. If you want to write down Deuteronomy 31, near the end of his life, after Moses has walked through this situation with God, he says later, as he's ending sort of his life, he says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them. Why should you not do that? He says, because the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Yet at that moment in the bush, Moses' response is, who am I? And God's response is, I will not fail you. I will not forsake you. I will be with you. You may feel inadequate for what God has called you to, and the fact is, you probably are, but he will be with you, and he is enough. The second objection Moses makes, chapter 4, verse 1, that we're going to look at, he says, what if they do not believe me or listen to me? Or what if they even say, this message isn't even from God? The Lord didn't appear to you and say this. Moses' next objection to responding to the call of God is that people might not receive what it is that he is saying, what he is called to do. He might be rejected. I think that might be one of our most common objections to the things that God calls us to. What is it that my friends might say if I do that? What is it that will happen to my family if I choose to follow in that way? What if I put myself out there and I make a fool of myself? What if no one cares or no one will listen? It's a response that's focused almost entirely on us and very little on what it is that God's asking of us and on his ability to accomplish it. It's based on our fear of rejection rather than our trust in God. And so God, once again, is patient with Moses in this moment, and he responds in verses 2 through 9 by saying, well, what is it that you have? What is it that you have? You have a staff, right? Throw it on the ground. And we know the story, it turns into a snake. Well, what else do you have, rancher man? What else do you carry around with you? His hand, right? He doesn't have much. He has a staff and his hand and his cloak. So he puts his hand in his cloak, and it's turned leprous. He puts it in again, and it's healed. God takes the smallest amount of things that Moses actually has with him and does something which only he can do to demonstrate that he will come through in the time when Moses needs him. That he has the power to show himself real and powerful in those moments when Moses puts himself out there. That he has his back, so to speak, as we would say nowadays. That when Moses steps out and begins to speak what God has told him, God will be there himself, showing up in ways that only he can. Moses just has to be obedient and trust. We have to learn over time in our lives to trust that God will show up in those moments that terrify us. When he's calling us to something and we're fearful, we learn to be obedient and trust, and he shows up and does what only he can do. Instead of a fear of rejection, we have to choose to have faith in the God who shows up in those moments and makes himself known. So Moses feels inadequate. He's got a little bit of a fear of rejection. And we'll see again in verse 10, he has another excuse. We're going to read verse 10 and verse 13. Moses says, pardon your servant. That's a good phrase to speak to the Lord. I've never been eloquent, either in the past or since you've spoken to me. I'm slow of speech and tongue. And in verse 13, please send someone else. So Moses has objected that he's not sure he's adequate. He's objected because he's feared of rejection. And now he says, look, I don't even have the gifts that you're asking me to use. I don't know how to speak, and yet you're calling me to speak. Not only have I never been to the right classes and whatever, but I've never actually been a good speaker, but that's the thing you're calling me to. The objection has shifted from I'm not good enough to they won't believe me to but that's not my gift, send someone else. Have you ever said that to God? I can't work with that age group. I'm no good with kids. I'm no good with teens. I'm no good in small groups. I'm no good in big groups. I don't have any gifts there. Send someone else. I don't have the ability to speak. I couldn't stand up there on Sunday morning, proclaim the things from God's word. I don't have that ability. I can't invite people to church. Have someone else do it. Just send someone else, God. See his response to Moses? Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak. And I will teach you what to say. And even more, after he says, send someone else, God says, okay, I'll even give you someone to help you. You're still going to do this thing, but I'll still give you even more help. I'll send someone along. God promises to give all that is needed to accomplish the thing which he has called Moses to. I think God says that to us as well. When we're faced with those moments of saying, I don't think I even have the abilities to do this thing, I think God surrounds us with people who can come alongside and help us, and he gives us the ability, even in those moments, to do things we never thought that we could. I don't know if you will ever feel this way about me. I feel this way. I hated my whole life speaking in front of people, whether it was one person or 20. I would get sweaty, and I could never remember what I was going to say, and all that kind of stuff. So the idea that God would have me do what I'm doing freaked me out for most of my life. For a lot of the reasons that Moses just said. In fact, I think it's partially some of why I spent some of my life doing other things than being in ministry. Yet God is faithful to give us what we need when we finally step into those things. I don't know what your call or what it is that God might be speaking to you. It could be a life thing. It could just be something this week. It could be something today, where God just speaks something small and calls you to do something. We must learn to process those decisions with the faith in the God who shows up, in the God who says he will be there, in the God who provides people alongside of us to help with the task. I think God says, trust me to give you the ability you need. Just be obedient to my call. So what is he calling you to do? You heard the question from Chase last week. My additional questions are, what does it look like? Is it in line with the character of God? We said that his call is always in line with his mission, with who he is, with the character and nature of God. As you read his word, is the thing he's calling you to something which is in line with his nature? If it is, are you being obedient to it? Are you choosing to follow in faith all that God has called you to? Or are some of these same fears that Moses had about his word of the Lord moment, are some of those fears prevalent in your life? When God has spoken to you, do you have those same fears? Inadequacy? I just don't have the right gifts? What are people going to say? Let's choose to trust in faith that God will show up and that he will equip us for all that is ahead. It's my challenge for you this week.